Well, I'm going to begin my message with just a quick poll here. How many of you are the youngest child in your family? So some of you older people still could be youngest children. Yeah, good number of us. You know what they say about us, right? That we're spoiled rotten. Mm-hmm. That we're a little whiny. That we can bug the living daylights out of our older siblings. Yeah. I'm hearing a few people agreeing with that. I'm a youngest child. I've got an older brother and an older sister. And while we get along swimmingly nowadays, I can admit it wasn't exactly a love fest growing up. Boy, could I irritate them. And sometimes it was kind of fun. Now that I think about it, though, you know, really, I could irritate more than just my siblings. Maybe it was a phase I was going through, you know, somewhere between the ages of 3 and, 20. I'm sure that's hard to believe now for some of you, especially who know me, you know, sweet, easygoing, non-irritating, bubbles and sunshine all the time, Todd. Isn't that right, Patty and Denise? Yeah. There was a time, though, when I could irritate the best of them, my siblings, my friends, my teachers, my parents, particularly my dad, on family vacations. Every year, for the entire month of August, we would go on a long camping road trip, 5 people in an overcrowded station wagon for 4 weeks, and 3 kids sandwiched in the back seat. My brother with the prime window seat behind the driver, my sister with the other prime window seat, and then little baby brother sandwiched in between in the middle for hundreds and hundreds of miles. Yeah, it was a recipe for disaster. I didn't want to be in that spot any more than they wanted me in that spot. So naturally, there was a good amount of stop leaning on me. Stop touching me. Dad, he pinched me. Dad, his foot's in my space. Oh, Dad, he's picking his nose again. Ick, you're sweaty. Get away, Dad. And eventually it would happen. After enough whining, after enough caterwauling, my dad would pull over the car. Mm-hmm. We could be downtown Denver, it wouldn't matter. He'd pull that car over, and then he'd give us one of those classic dad speeches. I work hard all year long. This is the one break I get, and we take you kids on this fun trip, and this is how you treat us. And then he'd go on, and you could hear a pin drop, I tell you. Oh. And then my dad, after ranting long enough, then he would slowly ease back into traffic, and my brother, he'd be just staring there out his window, all quiet. My sister, she'd be staring out hers, and there I sat in the middle, knowing full well this was somehow all my fault. That's when the tears would come. You know those great big old quiet ones that make your throat hurt deep down inside because you don't want anyone to know you're crying, right? It was not such a good moment, those feelings inside, the cause of this ishy silence, you know, just feeling like I was a big disappointment, feeling unloved, feeling like I was the cause of ruining my dad's vacation. I mean, oh, I tell you, I could have swirled right down into one big old pity party about then, had it not been for my mother. You see, moms must just somehow have some uncanny sense of hearing those big old quiet tears without even looking. And at some point in that ishy silence, as sure as anything, my mother's hand would slip over the front seat and into the back, reaching and searching for my hand until at last she found it, and then she'd hold it. Just a few moments she held it, and then she'd give it a little squeeze and a couple pats on the knee, and that was it. And that was enough. It was enough for me to know I was still loved. I mattered. I was still part of the family, and things were going to be okay. A long story for me to simply tell you That's Christmas. That's what we're remembering and celebrating and receiving this Christmas Eve. God's loving hand reaching down from heaven to earth, finding and holding ours, our hearts, our lives. This intentional journey God makes from the back seat, or from the front seat to the back, so that people like me and people like you would know we matter. We are loved, and things are going to be okay. A number of us here at Living Waters have taken the challenge of reading the Bible in 1 year. And so we started back in November. Right now we've finished the books of Leviticus and Numbers, which, let me just say, are about as dull and tedious as they come. And so far in the story, God, it would seem, well, God seems just a little on edge, you know? And with good reason. Creation isn't going exactly how God intended creation to be. And people, the crowning touch of God's creation, well, we're just whiny and irritating and very unappreciative. Again and again, forgetting God, thinking we don't need God, worshiping other gods. And a person's got to wonder just how thin God's patience must be becoming. Well, eventually, spoiler alert, God comes into our world, and what any reasonable person might expect is that this is God's big opportunity, God's chance to kind of pull the car over, so to speak, you know? Really put us in our place and give us a talking to. Give us a scolding. Remind us who is God and who is not. And I think a lot of people back then were expecting God to do just that. So is it any wonder that a lot of people back then missed it? God slipping into our world. No dramatic entrance, no stopping the car, no tongue lashing. In fact, about as opposite as you could get. When God decided to get personally involved, for all good and understandable reasons that God could have come to punish us or frighten us or scold us, instead God comes to tell us that we matter, that we're family, that we are loved deeply, truly, and forever. And just to make sure that we got the point of that message, God first brought that message to people that the world thought didn't matter at all. People regarded as unimportant, unwelcome, unloved. People that God chooses, such as an unwed teenage girl, to bear his divine presence. God chooses some low-life, nobody shepherds to first welcome and receive him, as well as some astrologers practicing a whole different religion. Realize these weren't people who just happened to be in the area at the time. God guided those astrologers by means of a star. God got the attention of the shepherds using a choir of angels. God intentionally chose the least likely people on this planet to show that God's love was for everyone, whether the world thought you were important or lovable or not. And for those shepherds, man, can you imagine what a surprise that must have been? What a shock. You see, if you were a shepherd back then, you were on the bottom rung of the social ladder. Shepherds were considered liars and degenerates. In fact, many towns actually had ordinances barring shepherds from the city limits. And religious leaders back then, well, they considered shepherds to be sinners by virtue of their vocation. They slept with animals, for heaven's sakes. They worked on the Sabbath. Shepherds were through and through unclean. And you know how it goes. You hear something long enough, and then you start to believe it, right? And my guess is those shepherds were pretty much convinced that God had given up on them, so they had given up on God. So imagine the shock, imagine the surprise, not only to be the audience of these heavenly messengers, but that the message was to them, for them. How crazy is that? For to you is born this day in the city of David a Savior. To you, lowlife, nobody, worthless shepherds, God has come into the world for you. For you. I don't think I can safely say I would be standing here preaching this sermon if it hadn't been for those two little words, for you. Whiny, annoying, youngest brat that I was, I wasn't much of a popular kid back in my day. I was a scrawny kid, really bad at sports. And worst of all, I played the piano. And back then, in those days, there was this unspoken truth that only girly boys played the piano. I am so thankful that that truth has been debunked nowadays. But back then, to say the least, I was bullied, called all sorts of awful names, and you know how it goes. You hear something long enough, and then you start to believe it yourself. Right? So it was my last day of a week at Bible camp, my ninth grade summer. And that afternoon, we had a basketball game between cabins, and I believe my cabin invited me not to play. I guess they wanted to win. And I remember sitting there all alone, watching that stupid game, trying my darndest to ignore that awful ache in the back of my throat. Like not mattering, didn't matter. Well, later that evening, our camp counselor took us on top of a hill, and he built a campfire, and there, under the very starry night, he told us a familiar story. And it was the story of Jesus' crucifixion, his arrest, his suffering, his brutal, inhumane death on the cross. And you know, I had heard that story plenty of times before. I was a good church-going boy and all. I knew what had happened. I knew all the main characters. I knew the outcome. Only that night, for some reason or another, there were two words in that story that just hit me like a ton of bricks, like I had never heard those words before. For you. For you. Jesus had gone through unfathomable pain and suffering and death for me. And there under that starry sky on that long ago night, I could feel it, crazier than anything, God's hand in mine, holding, squeezing, patting my knee. And it was enough. It was enough for me to know I mattered. I was loved more than I could possibly imagine. I was family, and things were going to be okay. And they have been. Tonight we tell a story that I'm pretty sure most of us have heard plenty of times before. Only tonight we're invited to pay particular attention to two little words, to you. For to you is born this day a Savior. To you. I don't see myself as the poster child for feeling worthless or being bullied because I believe we're all bullied in some ways. And if nothing else, by a world out there that loves to tell us, reminds us pretty much 24/7 of all the ways we don't matter, all the ways we don't measure up. All the things and the qualities that we lack, the mistakes we make in trying to matter, and then throw in a couple of family members who are ticked off at you and co-workers and a failure or two and a dream or two unrealized. And after a while, it's easy to believe. The gift of Christmas is knowing that God has made it from the front seat to the back. And not to join in the voices of the world, but rather to counter them. To counter them with a deep and enduring truth. You matter. You matter to God. You are loved deeply, truly and forever. And things are going to be okay. And you know, maybe this year as a Christmas gift to ourselves, maybe we should start to listen for God's voice just a little more. Because you know how it goes. You hear something long enough and, well, Merry Christmas.